Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go.
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there. Nobody's touching. Get grabbing, everybody.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
Welcome to episode 140 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's the whole family for episode 140. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. It is episode 140, Peter. I'm not going to even guess. Go ahead.
Number 40. It's Cal Hubbard, Packers Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, and uniquely is the only person in the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame.
What? Really?
Oh, yes.
Come on.
Cal Hubbard, let's go. I'm sorry. Let's do this.
So Cal Hubbard played in the 1920s and 1930s and was a big guy for that time. And his heights, you won't get a consistent view on what his height was, anywhere between 6'2" and 6'5", depending on which article or who's talking about him. He was a huge guy for the time in which he played, 255 pounds, that kind of area. Started his pro career at the New York Giants for a couple of years, 27-28, and played offensive tackle and defensive tackle and defensive end. All of those guys obviously played both ways. Came to the Packers in 1929. Was a big signing by Curly Lambeau. And he played for the Packers from 29 through to 1935 and was part of that 3-in-a-row championship teams, 29, 30, and 31. Packers very nearly won the championship again in 1932 as well. And Hubbard was, I guess, one of the first great offensive and defensive linemen playing at the size at which he played. Would rush the passer, like I say, great offensive tackle. And towards the end of his football playing career, he started to umpire in minor league baseball. And then when he finished his football career, his last year was in 1936 with the Pittsburgh Pirates in the NFL. He went into major league baseball umpiring, and he umpired in major league baseball for many years and even earned himself the nickname as the Big Umpire. Hence, he became, like I say, the only person to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the baseball Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. Just some of the idea, as I said, he's a four-time NFL champion, once with the Giants, three times with the Packers, was in the 1920s All-Decade team, was in the NFL's 50th anniversary team, 75th anniversary team, and even the 100th anniversary team that was chosen a couple of years ago. He was one of the 10 offensive tackles in that team, obviously in the Packers Hall of Fame, and is in numerous state athletic Hall of Fames as well. And truly, again, one of those great players from Packers history from the 20s and 30s whose name adorns the Ring of Honor at Lambeau Field. Unique membership of those two professional Hall of Fames. Robert Cal Hubbard.
Did he umpire a World Series?
Now, there's a question that I don't know the answer to.
I would figure, though, if he's a baseball Hall of Fame, he had to have.
Yes.
Okay. So I've pulled it up as you were talking there. So he umpired the 1938 World Series, 1942, 1946, 1949.
Holy
mackerel. Four World Series.
That's awesome.
Wow.
It's so much better than Eddie Lee Ivory and his four carries for his career.
We'll save Eddie Lee for episode 240.
Yeah, sounds good. So let's get into the slices. Thank you, Peter. I love that part of the show. We are 13 followers away from 2,000. If you're listening right now and you have someone that would like to earn a free T-shirt, we will give away an Average Cheese T-shirt to whoever number 2,000 is. And if you are listening to us and you don't follow us, I'm not sure why, but you should. And maybe you will be number 2,000, get a free T-shirt. Both Kenny Clark and Christian Watson were hurt in the Rams game. Clark left the game, and so did Watson, right? They both were taken to the tunnel.
I didn't see Watson, but I know Clark did.
And Clark went out early. Yeah. Shoulder?
Yeah, and Watson was on that long pass that he caught. He came down weird. It was a great play on the ball. a great catch. He came down very strange. I don't know what kind of injury it was. I would guess like a shoulder or something.
Peter, did you hear anything about Christian Watson?
There were three injuries that they talked about, one of which was a concussion. And Matt LaFleur said in the post-game presser that they believed that he didn't have a concussion. I think one was chest and one was
back.
Yeah.
Nyman was a back. I don't know if they listed him out, but he, you know, he started that game and then Walker came in, I think mostly of the second half. I was like, oh, are they like trying to see who's going to be whatever? And then it was like, no, Nyman had a back injury.
I didn't think that Nyman played poorly enough to be replaced.
No, he didn't. And that's why I was like wondering when he saw Walker come back in. And honestly, Walker didn't play that bad.
I don't want to think Christian Watson's injury, but his mom needs to get the hell off of social media. What the fuck is she doing?
I haven't seen it. What's going on?
Anytime someone talks shit about her son, she's right there. Now, I get it, right? Imagine, like, your kid's a professional athlete. I would immediately delete all social media. I don't want to see any of it because even in the best of times, you're going to get shit talked about you as a professional athlete. Why would I want to see my kid getting beat up in social media? That's stupid. Please get off of social media. It's awkward as hell every time. What else, Peter? You were going to say something. I cut you off.
No, I was going to say, I guess the Kenny Clark one was the one that really, well, they all can, obviously all injuries concern you, but the Kenny Clark one really concerned because he went out, as Todd said, he went out early in the game and didn't come back. And that kind of generally indicates an injury of a more difficult nature, should we say. I don't want to use the word serious because I don't know what the situation is there, but it would be a concern if Kenny Clark couldn't go in upcoming games.
Yeah, that would be a real problem, especially against the Steelers, who will probably run the ball 900 times. In the last slice, I got a chance to meet the legend, Leroy Butler, at school. It was so strange. I put the picture on social media, right, of me standing next to him while he's holding the Average Cheese shirt up. The one that will never see anything is me following him around like, don't leave. Like, there's a picture where I'm falling behind him and I like still have that shit-eating grin on my face.
He's probably like, who the fuck is this guy?
I want to tell you.
Stalker Dale.
I looked like a total stalker in the
world. Security. Security, quick.
Yeah.
It was just him and this woman. And I'm telling you, he was the nicest person you could imagine. I can't even explain to you how nice he was. So I'm like, Mr. Butler, I said, this is not a shirt as nice as the Hall of Fame jacket you're wearing, but I would love for you to have this. I said, you know, hopefully it's your size. He's like, is it a medium? I'm like, no, it's an extra large. He ain't a medium. But he was like, immediately just started being kind. He talked to me about coming on our podcast. He's like, oh, I don't want to do it in the summertime because no one will be listening anyway. Like, he was actually thinking about how he could benefit us. That was so, so nice. And he gave me his personal email.
Damn.
What? I got it on a piece of paper. I'm like, oh my gosh. My heart was beating. I thought I was going to have a damn heart attack. Right there in front of the legend. So anyway, it was awesome.
I wonder if he would wear an Average Cheese t-shirt and then the Hall of Fame jacket.
Over it.
And that would be the photo.
He was incredibly kind. So Mr.
We got to get him on.
Yes, we will absolutely. And he came down a second time because one of our teachers like flagged him down and came down and talked to me a second time and started talking more about like what we should talk about. We should go during the draft. Can we go right before the draft? I'd love to talk before. My mind was just blown at his kindness. So, again, if you're listening, thank you so much. It was an amazing experience.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
He is an awesome man. All right. So, less awesome, but almost, not even close to being as awesome. The Packers won this week.
Yeah.
20-3. They still haven't scored many points. Let's just get into it. Peter, initial thoughts on the 23 win versus the Rams?
Solid. There was lots of things to be pleased about as a general point. There's some, clearly still some things to work on. And it was the Rams without Matt Stafford. But still, you can only beat the team that's in front of you. It was never you know, despite the margin of victory being 17 points, it was a close game for most of the game. You know, it was still 10-3 at the end of the third quarter. But the Packers played solid all across the board. You know, there were good things to pick out on offense, on defense, on special teams. So, yeah, as a general, good performance.
Bad thoughts?
This was a close game. I mean, they got off to a very slow start. And I thought, oh, Christ, here we go again. But what I liked the most was the players. They seemed to just have to have this win. You saw a lot of players when they were making mistakes or there was some type of adverse situation, there was other players coming over and like picking them up immediately. You know, the Dontavian Wicks fumble, for example, Aaron Jones immediately over there, right in his face saying, hey, come on, I got you. Let's get over to the sidelines. We need, like, there was a lot of that going on. That was just one example, but I felt as though the energy of the team was just like, we have to win this game. It doesn't matter what happens. Penalties, there was a lot of the same mistakes were happening, especially in the first half. But overall, the energy of the team just seemed to be like, we need this, and there isn't anything we're going to do. There isn't anything we won't do in order to make this happen. And a lot of support for guys and a lot of leadership being shown. A lot of energy, great energy.
It's interesting you say that because it could start to wane. The leadership, the energy, like we're 2-5 right now and we're probably not going to the playoffs. It could have been a problem. And that's nice to see. I don't want to talk too negatively about because there's going to be a good, bad and ugly. I'm just a little concerned that we can't stop making the same mistakes over and over and over and over again. That's the thing. So I listened to the game again. I'm still working on this goddamn deck that I'm working on. I swear I'm going to be working on it until I'm 75 years old. But I'm working on this deck, listening to the game, and it's just penalty, 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 fumble. Like it's like we can't stop doing those things. And that's getting extremely frustrating for me.
Some of the mistakes, a lot of them are coming from the same guys. That's where I start to look at, okay. We'll get into it, but it seems to be some of the same guys making the same mistakes. You know, they dealt with a game where they knew they got off to a slow start. They hung in there, stuck together, and they found a way to win the game. And to holding a NFL team, I don't care if it's a backup or not, you hold them to 3 points. You're doing things on the football field. And there was, and like, they finally, I think maybe the first time this season, they kind of energized the crowd. I haven't seen Lambeau like, alive this year yet.
What was good, Peter, offensively?
Place to start is the quarterback. We'll put aside one deep throw that we'll come back to. But, you know, he went 20 for 26. And when you look at the six incompletions, there were 3 drops in there. And that doesn't include the deep pass to Watson. So it's three drops in there. And there was a spike of the football to stop the clock. 4 of those incompletions weren't down to him. So, you know, literally 20 of 22 passing. I thought he was excellent. Yes, there's still stuff to work on, like that deep throw. You know, I thought that was Love's best game of the season. And I think that was the performance probably that we hoped that we were going to get in about week 3 or week 4, following on from the Chicago performance in week 1. Still lots to work on, but very encouraging. The touchdown pass, what a super play that was, the touchdown pass to Musgrave in the fourth quarter. And it was interesting to hear Matt LaFleur talk about that in the press conference because he was asked where that came from and who it was that came up with the idea of putting that in the game plan. You know, he couldn't remember, but he talked about it, you know, it's not being a new play and it was something that they'd used before and he'd seen before. Well, I can tell you now that there's film of the Rams running that play in 1950. Bob Waterfield at quarterback. So that play is at least 73 years old, at least. It's interesting how that stuff comes back. It was a super play. You know, it was one of those where the 2 fakes to the flat opened up the middle of the field, and that's what we've been looking for with Musgrave. I was just glad he caught it. You know, it would have been just typical of, you know, of the season, if it had either dropped it or there'd have been a penalty on that play for us to put together such a nice play. But very pleased with the performance of the quarterback. And I haven't touched on the running game yet. And I'll let one of you guys talk about that.
Todd, go ahead.
I was just going to add to the Musgrave touchdown is they had set that play up throughout the game. Those out to the flats, they actually executed that a couple times on each side. So that was giving the defense like a lot of misdirections. Like they had seen that before. And then it is basically a double fake. Man, that was a beautiful play. I mean, and the timing of it.
It looked gorgeous, to go. Did it?
Yeah, it was just all gorgeous. Like it all kind of came together at the right time. The only thing I didn't like about the play was Musgrave's first touchdown, no Lambeau leap. We're talking about LeRoy Butler on this episode. Come on, dude.
And he threw the ball into the stand.
No, he didn't throw it down. I think he spiked it or something.
I'm guessing that he thought this is just going to be the first of many.
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's go with that. But anyway, I mean, all joking aside, that play was orchestrated throughout the game. They were setting that up with a lot of jet sweeps and misdirections. Man, that was the perfect time for that play call.
And I've been talking about getting Musgrave vertical for the entire season. Running him out into the flat is never going to be utilizing his skill set to the maximum degree. He's not a lateral guy. He's a straight line guy. Start making that happen week after week.
I like Musgrave a lot. I think he is an NFL tight end without question.
He jumps off the page sometimes, although his balance is shit. Yeah. I always feel like he's going to fall over no matter what.
That'll come in time. But at least we could run the ball this game.
This is the first time all year we've run for over 150 yards in a game.
Back to your Twitter post of the percentages of Aaron Jones rushing for over, what was it, 65 or something?
5 and 75, yeah.
There we go. You know, he rushed for 73 yards. They fed him the ball a lot. And I just love when Aaron Jones is in the backfield and he's kind of, as the play is going right or left, he's like backstepping and just like searching for that lane and then finds it and explodes through. That's something that, well, obviously AJ Dillon doesn't have that skill set, but like to see that come back for the first time this year, that was very encouraging. And yes, give him the ball 20 times in a game like this. And, you know, Dillon was right there too. 9 carries for 40. We'll take that too. So
he's running back two. That's where he belongs, right? Getting his 10 to 15 carries when guys are gassed. And your guy, Emmanuel Wilson, had some carries too. That's his role. Let's put him in for two or three times a game.
It was a garbage time, but like he busted it outside.
He did.
Yeah. And I think he caught them. It was a run. It was like a off tackle to the right side. And there was nothing there. And he bounced it to the outside and like beat everybody. Yes, it was in garbage time at the end of the game. The game was put away, but like it looked very nice.
I mean, those are professional players out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes you, I mean, that was an outstanding run and it showed really nice acceleration. I wonder whether that's the reason that the Packers today have released James Robinson from the practice squad.
Ooh.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. So he's only been there, what, 3 weeks, I want to say.
Yeah, we got our guy.
Right.
What about the bad offensively?
Penalties.
Every damn week.
There was at least two very significant, where were they, fourth and ones?
Yeah, they were both fourth and ones.
There was actually a bunch of them, yeah. Converted the fourth and one, and then penalty. Those are just killing the drives.
And the strangest penalty, you know, offside, but John running offside
on the offense
on both of those. It's a weird one because by the letter of the law, he was offside. His helmet was lined up over the football. The line of scrimmage is the width of the football. You cannot be lined up. However, you never see it called.
Right.
Right. And if you go and watch other games and other teams, I would imagine that it happens a fair amount and it's just never called. Now, they made a point on the TV commentary about it being a point of emphasis this year. So maybe it has been called more often this year. It's a long time since certainly I've seen that called in a Packers game, and to have it called twice on such key plays as Todd described was it's just strange. If there's a team that's going to find a penalty that's never called, it's the Packers.
Actually, the first one that was called, they called it on Nyman.
They did.
And it was actually on Runyon.
Definitely Runyon, yeah.
And then the next one was actually on, and it was like, I guess, you know, when they're in those situations, and I mean, it was inches. It was literally not even a foot. It was inches. You know, the linemen bunch up and you just got to be cognizant of that, man. I mean, yes. Like you said, Peter, do they call that often? No, you just got to be better. You just got to be all around focused on what's going on. That was terrible. Some of those, I was just like, Jesus.
Let's talk a little bit about Christian Watson. We talked about the injury and he's had a few injuries here and there, missed a few games here and there. I mean, I'm still happy we didn't pick George Pickens. Did you see his thing?
No.
Freebie, and he's George Pickens from Pittsburgh is now like no longer following Kenny Pickett and the team Instagram or whatever. He's already, he had like two catches for negative 1 yards or something like that. And he's ready to get out. No, I want to go on record. I was never a George Pickens guy. I said that years ago. I didn't like him. But that was sort of the area that we were in, right? Christian Watson or George Pickens at that time. Not saying would you rather have Pickens, Peter. What can we expect, or what should we temper our expectations for Christian Watson? Where are we with him?
Well, I think that we probably should temper our expectations. But I think part of that is what it appears that he's being asked to do. We know he's a speed guy. It appears, you know, I've not gone back and looked at every single route that he's run and whatever, but it appears that he's being asked to run a lot of deep routes, you know, a lot of go routes, a lot of nine routes, you know, just by the law of averages, how many of those passes do you complete?
Or even throw.
He's a guy with that level of speed that you'd like to get in the open field, you know, so obviously the deep routes do that, but you'd like to see him run some slants or some crosses or whatever where he gets open, gets the ball already at speed, because he's a very athletic guy. We kind of likened him from an athletic point of view to James Lofton. It was that kind of, that's what he looks like, that kind of athlete. But I think the wide receiver group as a whole, there's nominally, I'm sure, a depth chart of 1, 2, 3, 4, but I don't really see that now. I'm just seeing a group of four guys that on any particular week, any one of those four could be the featured receiver. I'm okay with where Christian Watson is. I think that, again, you know, struggled early in the season with injuries, and I think this is just going to be a time thing. And I suspect there's a breakout game coming. And once they start completing more and more of these deep passes, I think there's a breakout game coming from him. I'm okay with him.
Pat, any thoughts on Christian Watson before we move on?
I feel like right now he's just, they're scheming him as a one-dimensional receiver.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, like, he's your most talented receiver. We know that. Get him more involved in the game. Get him some catches under his belt. And I don't care if it's like a quick slant across the middle or whatever you're asking of him. But like, to just ask him to just go deep and do a 50-50 ball 3 or 4 times a game, that's not utilizing this guy's full skill set. I think he's got a lot more to offer, and the Packers just aren't, for whatever reason. And yes, that, like Peter said, there's kind of like a wide variety of guys. It could be Wicks one day. You know, it could be Reed the next week. We don't know who the number one is. They just got to get him more schemed into the offense on some different plays. He just can't be that one deep threat. And defenses are going to hone in on that and be like, you know, this guy's all he does is go deep. He's like an MVS. I won't compare him to MVS, but
his role is similar to MVS.
It's similar. It's carving out like that. And I feel like he can be a possession receiver. He should be a fucking Davante Adams. That quick out, you know, on third and short or whatever, that's Christian Watson. Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams had that chemistry where you knew when it was third and short, there was nobody defending that. Now, I'm not saying they need to get to that level, but like, start utilizing him in some different situations other than just deep balls.
Yeah, and you also have to believe, and again, you know, I have to caveat this by saying I've not gone back and looked at every route that he's run, so I'm only going on almost a perception. But you have to believe that the more passes that he catches underneath, the more passes that he catches on different routes will then make that deep pass more effective.
Exactly. Of course. That feels like a no-brainer to all three of us. Clearly not to the coaching staff. Let's move on to the ugly. What has happened to John Runyon? Like, I feel like he has fallen off a cliff. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe it's because he doesn't have anyone to protect him anymore. Like, I don't know what it is, but he has really played poorly as of late.
Horrible.
One of the things that would be interesting, so he started, you know, he played left guard to begin with, and he started last season at left guard when Elgton Jenkins started the season at right tackle. And then kind of midway through last season, he moved over to right guard. You know, I wonder whether that's anything to do with it, whether he's struggling on the right side of the line as compared to the left side of the line. And I don't know that to be the case, but, you know, Mike Wall told us, you know, that's a difficult move to make from one side of the center to the other. So I don't know whether that's anything to do with it, but it's a strange one because he was the next guy, wasn't he, after Bakhtiari and Jenkins that you could rely on. Just week in, week out, did a nice job. And it seems to be struggling to the point that Sean Ryan was in the game for 15 snaps, Ryan was in for, and appeared to do, from what we could tell of what they highlighted on TV, appeared to do a good job. that was an interesting move. I'm not sure whether that's sending a message. Or indeed, as you said, is there an injury with Runyon that we just don't know about?
Did you notice from watching the Sean Ryan film, he seems nasty.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's got a little nasty side to him. Like, when he run blocks guys, he's putting his fucking hands on guys. Whereas Runyon kind of just, I don't even know what to say, holds on? I'd say he's more physical than most of the guys the Packers have.
Runyon had a 29 PFF pass block grade. 29. So, Peter, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they brought in Ryan on a red zone. But it was kind of strange. It was like, oh, wow, Runyon's out. And up to that point, Runyon was, you know, he had two penalties. He was just not playing well. And I was like, is he hurt? Is this like a substitution? And then all of a sudden, Runyon came back again. I don't know what they were doing there.
It almost got the feeling, and again, I don't know whether Runyon's got an underlying injury or whatever. It almost had the feeling that they decided, perhaps pre-game, that they were going to bring in Ryan for a drive or a couple of drives.
He ended up getting 15 snaps, and he had a 75 pass blocking grade from PFF. So
let's see where that goes. You have to go with the guy that's playing well. If you don't have a established guy, like you have Elgton Jenkins, you ride Elgton Jenkins until the wheels fall off. I would say Zach Tom has also become that guy.
For sure.
Zach Tom stays out there until all of a sudden something goes completely to shit. The other three guys, you're not playing well, time to cycle somebody else in there. What about defense? Let's move on to defense. What was good, Todd, on Sunday?
A lot. Which is kind of a different atmosphere than our previous podcast up until now.
Yeah.
I like Valentine.
Valentine.
A lot. I mean, he played with a lot of passion. He played with a lot of attitude. Rasul Douglas leaving, that's got to be a big, for what he brought to that defense as far as leadership, camaraderie, locker room presence, all of those things, to have that guy just like launched out of nowhere. And then you're the guy that's going to kind of come in and do that. And then to have the game that he did, wow.
And he was so good early in that game that they started to try and pick on Jair Alexander. And Alexander gave up a few catches early. And then Alexander probably had his best game of the season after that. Maybe there is something there. Maybe the opportunity to play make a huge difference. And you're only going to find out when they play. Valentine was the name that I was going to bring up. Thought he was really, really good. And like I said, I thought Alexander had probably his best game.
I loved it. Valentine was like, he was celebrating. Like he was doing all kinds of like talking shit. Like he was,
really love that.
He was feeling it. Like you could tell like this guy right now on the defensive side of the football, like this guy's feeling it right now. There's no question about it.
I mean, Cooper Kupp isn't Cooper Kupp right now,
right?
But he's still Cooper Kupp, right? Yes. And Puka Nacua has been like lighting up the league for 5-6 weeks in a row. It's not like it's a bad wide receiver group. And Tutu Atwell isn't a terrible player either. So, yes, it was not a very good quarterback. If you leave the guy wide open, that quarterback can complete those passes. What do you do, Peter, now when Eric Stokes comes back? Is Valentine able to play the slot, or do you keep Keyshawn Nixon there? Like, now what? Because he seems like a boundary guy to me, Valentine does.
You don't have Savage for a while, so maybe you balance things out.
I don't think there's an obvious spot for Stokes to come back into if Valentine continues to play at that level. I think the job's his to win now. I think he showed on Sunday that there is something there. There isn't an obvious place for Stokes to come back in, but that's 3, 4, 5, 6, how many weeks away? We don't know. A lot can happen between now and then. So, and if there isn't an obvious place for him to come back into, that's a good problem to have.
What about Stokes filling in for Savage?
Oh, God, no.
No?
Could you imagine him trying to come up and run to play in Rundy?
I don't know.
He's built like a stick.
I know, but like at least the contact would be reduced, right?
He can't locate the football. He is Darnell Savage Jr. out there. Ball go right past his head. Do we remember what happened a couple of years ago?
If I have Eric Stokes on the sideline and he's healthy and I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm like, man, I got to get this guy on the field somehow. I guess we wait to see. I mean, yes, this was the Rams. They are probably one of the worst teams in the NFL. But yeah, he was going against some decent receivers and Valentine proved
it. I guess the other thing is if you played a run as well as the Packers have played the run the last couple of weeks, and they have played the run really well, you know, the numbers were again exceptional this this past week would have been even better, except for two or three quarterback scrambles. I think when that happens, you're going to end up with the offense, the opposition's offense, in lots of second and nines, third and eights, and you're going to end up with six defensive backs or even seven defensive backs on the field anyway. I guess Stokes will see some time that way. And that's assuming he comes back this year. I just don't know. And again, perhaps it alludes a little bit to what you touched on with Jair Alexander. The same thing may apply to Stokes. What if you get to week 12 and you're 4-8 or whatever, or 3-9, heaven forbid? You know, do you just shut it down with those guys that are injured anyway?
Isaiah McDuffie had a nice game in Quay Walker.
Best of his career. By far, he was everywhere.
What do you attribute that to? With Devondre Campbell playing? I mean, is Devondre Campbell's presence, is Isaiah McDuffie not the sticker on the helmet guy and then he can just play free? Like, I'm trying to come up with a reason why he played so well in this game and he really hasn't in other spots.
You never have to doubt his effort or intensity. Like, that's never a question. He deals with size, a defensive coordinator who seems to be a little bit out of whack at times. Man, he had a game. This was his best career game, period. He was everywhere busting up plays, shooting through the line of scrimmage for loss. Outstanding game.
Hard to come up with a bad when you only give up 3 points.
I know. I didn't think this season we would ever come up with a...
No bad and ugly on defense.
No bad for defense. I mean, when you let up a field goal, I mean, come on.
And I think the other thing that goes along with that, you know, we touched on this last week or the week before, where they've given up long drives, which they didn't give up so much this week. But the other thing they also did this week, which we've been crying out for, is they forced turnovers. You know, you just have to do that. They only had six coming into this game. They forced a number of turnovers in this game. You absolutely have to do that. And I think the only downside, if you like, and it's not a defensive downside, it's the offensive downside, and you hate to have a downside when you've won 20-3, is there were lots of opportunities forced by the defense where you'd hope to have probably scored more than 20 points with all of those opportunities created. I'm nitpicking a little bit there.
One bad that I can think of, there were no real sacks in this game.
No, there's one.
Jonathan Owens was credited with a sack. That's not real. Yeah. That wasn't really a sack. Got his first fumble recovery sack of his career, but not really. Peter, I have a question about the defense before we move on to the special teams. If you could go back and you knew you were going to get Kobe Wooden and Carl Brooks, would the order of how they were drafted be any different? Like, who's playing better at this point?
I think probably Wooden, but I don't think there's a lot in it. I think the difficulty I had with Wooden, and I still have with Wooden, and I think this is just going to be a time thing to get it out of my own head, is a size thing and how he really fits into the 3-4. But actually, I thought he had a good game, particularly after Kenny Clark went out. Yeah, he made a key tackle. I can't remember. Third down play. It might have been the fourth down play. I can't remember now. I think the order they were picked in was okay. And I think Wooden's been better than I kind of dared to hope, because I was just concerned about where he fitted in. No, I'm happy with both of those guys.
I am too. I guess I was more surprised with Brooks, small school guy. Maybe that's my bias. Special teams wise, good, bad, ugly. We are going to have to remember that Anders Carlson is a rookie, one. And two, he's not very accurate in the best of times. So how many kicks does he miss? I think two. Officially, I mean, he missed the one, but then the called back last week, so that doesn't count. I mean, you get a mulligan there. He's gonna miss kicks, but he can kick the ball out of the end zone.
Yeah, except for the ones that he didn't blast through the end zone, which I don't know whether those were by design.
It feels like they are, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's just misreading it.
Also, maybe, you know, with the touchback coming out to the 25, if you're able to get a high enough trajectory on those kickoffs, like a punt, actually it's pretty difficult for the kick returner to get it out beyond the 20. And bad things happen on kick returns, fumbles and that kind of thing as well. So, but yeah, I mean, we touched on Anders Carlson last week, you know, when he missed that field goal that was then, but there was a penalty on it, so he got the second chance at it. And we kind of mentioned last week that let's just hope that that's not the start of, you know, missed one the previous week and that kind of thing. But he bounced back from the one that he missed this week, kicked two more. As you say, he's missed two all season, and here we are halfway through the season, and he's missed just two field goal attempts. And whoever your kicker is, if that's the situation, I think nobody's going to grumble at that. He's done a good job. He really has. First half of his rookie season has been a pleasant surprise. As our Twitter poll said, he's the most pleasant surprise on the Packers team.
I expected him to miss many more kicks than he has. Watching him in the preseason, I'm like, oh, wow. He's going to miss at least one per game. That's what it felt like. It felt like Crosby's bad seasons. That's what we were going to get.
It was a 70%. That area kicker in college, give or two a percentage point here or there, you know. So is that kind of so? And it's very rare, I think, that you see a guy that puts on 10 percentage points or 15 percentage points in the NFL. So I think that was the concern and surprise when he was picked. But he's well exceeded our expectations, and if he continues along, fine. Then they've done well, and he'll turn out to be an excellent draft pick.
Yeah, and I'll be wrong for the first time in my life. Zero fucks had a nice return on a kick, and he had a decent punt return, too. Wonder why they put him out there, him and Reed kind of go back and forth on punt returns. Any reasoning behind that, do you think?
No, I mean, the only thing I can imagine, maybe a feel thing. Maybe one of them is just feeling it at that time, or one of them has been out on the field for extra plays or... You know, we haven't had one good one for a number of years. So now to have two guys that can do the job is outstanding.
And Daniel Whelan was fine. Averaged like 45 yards a kick. I don't have it in front of me, but he wasn't terrible. And if you're not terrible, we'll take it. All right, let's preview the Pittsburgh Steelers coming up this week. Depth chart wise, Kenny Pickett at quarterback, Najee Harris, Deontay Johnson at wide receiver, him and George Pickens, him and Free Me George Pickens, along with Allen Robinson, who is about 5 years past, maybe 6-7 years past his prime. Peter, I wanted to ask you this, though. So we talked about all the tight ends in the draft, all these young, very athletic guys, and Darnell Washington was that guy, right, that had risen up the board. Like, he's going to be it. Six. Wasn't he a perfect 10 in Raz, or very close to a perfect 10? He right now has 2 catches for 17 yards on the season. Does that surprise you?
Slightly. However, if his season continues along those lines, then you were right all along.
First time in my life.
Because if my memory serves me correctly, we were talking about the tight ends around the draft time and the combine. And it was the combine, really, when he made that catch on the sideline that. But I remember talking to you at that time, and of that kind of group of 5 or 6 tight ends, because there was that nice group, he was the one that you were really not sure about. And and thus far, you've been absolutely spot on about him.
So far. They've got him. Now, Pat Freiermuth went on IR, but there are 2 other tight ends who have caught more balls than Darnell Washington. I don't want to say he's third string, because he's now moved up to second string because of the injury, but he's not starting. Connor Hayward starts at tight end for them. I mean, this is a Steelers team, so we can assume, right, that they're going to run the fucking ball and try to keep it out of Kenny Pickett's hands at this point. Is Kenny Pickett what you expected him to be?
He's exactly what I expected him to be, if I'm really honest. I think you look at Kenny Pickett, I think what you get is what I always kind of perceived him to be, is that kind of 10 to 12 year NFL player somewhere in the middle of the pack of NFL quarterbacks across his career. Can manage a game, can run the 2-minute offense, but isn't going to wow you with athletic skills and any particular throw. And I think that's what he was in college, Pittsburgh, and that's, I think, what we've seen through 8 games of the NFL season. And I think that works as long as you've got the offensive firepower elsewhere.
So the offense, I don't want to say it doesn't scare me. Najee Harris has not become the back that I expected him to become. He's a good player, and maybe it's offensive line play. I don't watch enough Steelers, to be honest, to be able to say that it's him or it's their offensive line. I would guess it's offensive line. On the defensive side of the ball, it's like University of Wisconsin East. Yeah, a lot of Badgers on that team. TJ Watt, Keanu Benton. Nick Herbig is a linebacker for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think where they scare you is on the defensive side of the ball. Who's the other linebacker on the other side of Watt? His name escapes me right now. Is it
Alex Highsmith?
Highsmith, yes. Thank you. That's a little bit scary this week, right? They're going to be rushing the passer from both sides. You've got Nyman / Walker over on one side, and then you got Zach Tom, the young guy. That's a little bit scary. Joey Porter Jr., defensive back. Really has played pretty well. Like, there's some Minka Fitzpatrick has been around forever. Patrick Peterson is still in the league.
Yep.
Defensively, it's a little bit scary this week.
I think it is. I mean, particularly with the pass rushing skills that you've just described, and you know, Watt and Highsmith and those guys. And it's absolutely going to put a lot of pressure on the Packers' tackles and on the tight ends and the scheme to chip those guys. And maybe we'll see Love on the move a little bit more. This week, we shall see. But yeah, that's the area that scares you, because obviously from pressures and sacks and all of that, but then you get tipped balls and, you know, deflected passes and all of that kind of stuff. And that's where that defensive backfield comes into its own, but it starts with those pass rushes.
Todd, thoughts on this game?
It's an away game, correct? I might just drive up there. Yeah, I think it's going to be a close, grinding type game again. I think the Packers can pull this out. Yeah. I think they can pull this out. It'll be close. Maybe pull it out like 2017. Pittsburgh's offense doesn't really scare me all that much.
Looking through their season, the highest they've scored all season is 26. They scored 26 versus the Browns in week two. But they've also scored 10 or under three games this year.
I think this looks in our favor. And riding the wave of coming off a win, the locker room temperature is up. You got, I don't know if Quay Walker is coming back this week or not. I don't know if Rudy Ford is coming back this week or not. Obviously, there's some guys stepping up like Wooden and Valentine and some other good things happening all across the defense. So I like this game for the Packers, actually.
What's the point spread? Do we know what's the...
Right now, the Packers are +3. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are 3-point favorites at home.
And I think it's the other way around.
I'm going to go with what I said last week, right? So I think the Steelers being 3-point favorites is absolutely right. They're a 5-3 team. They're at home. They've got one of the top three pass rushers in the league. I think it's absolutely right that they're 3-point favorites. And therefore, I believe, again, the Packers are going to pull this one out. So I think the Packers will win by 3, 20-17.
It's Peter the Optimist part 2.
It worked last week, didn't it?
It did work last week, so I will not question your expertise one bit. I just don't see it, and I'll just keep saying it over and over again. The Packers can't score points, and I know that the Pittsburgh Steelers don't score a ton of points either. My concern would be that the Packers are going to give up a defensive touchdown, meaning the Steelers are going to score on defense. And we can't overcome that. The pressure on the quarterback is a little bit concerning for me. I worry about that. I don't have enough confidence in our offensive line. I think that's where the issue lies. I still don't see it from them. I think they lose 2017.
What's the under?
Over under is 37.5. So I have picked the under. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No.
No, Peter, no. All right. Then here we go. So thanks for listening to episode 140 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Cal Hubbard episode.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.